So you're going to Quebec City in April. What's going to bring you there?
Well, first of all, I have to admit I lived there, which is a pretty good starting point. And also, well, I've been part of the student movement in my last year of college, which brought me to another movement to oppose the WTO November 30 last year. And one of the things we talked about in that movement, I remember, was, okay, next year there's one important thing, the Summit of the Americas. And later on I heard much more about that self-same summit. And I decided to get to take part in the coalition because it sounds like a fucking important thing to do.
So the same issues that brought you to Seattle, are those the same issues that are going to bring you out in the streets of Quebec City?
Exactly. Although actually, I must mention, in all fairness, I didn't go to Seattle. Didn't have the time or energy, inclination.
But you were at home in solidarity.
Yeah, I was in Quebec City. There was a manifestation of a sort. 200 people, nothing really impressing. I think the bigger protests were in Seattle, and most of the groups, some groups in Quebec City actually organized caravans and buses to go there.
So you're a student, how are you affected by the issues that are going to bring you out in the streets in Quebec City?
Well, I'd say one of the things that I don't like about society, and this is really from a basic point of view, and talking about the neoliberal doctrine, is that it tends to divide people more and more according to classes. Before, people are divided whether they are women or men, poor or rich. And this is becoming one of the standards. Like, some people say, okay, there's a democracy in consumerism, but this democracy can only be achieved by those who have enough cash to buy things. I mean, I know some people who are poor, who don't have access to, say, the internet. Okay, I do at home, but it's not everybody's case. And what I don't like about this is that it excludes people based not on their values, not on their qualities, which even then would be bad, since it could give rise to quick and cheap judgments, but according to how much money they have in their wallet.
So the Summit of the Americas is to expand NAFTA to the Western Hemisphere. What effect has it had in Canada that you're fearful of its impact in the Western Hemisphere?
Well, one of the things that is quite considerable is the provisions that are included in NAFTA that will be included also in the FTAA, the Free Trade Area of the Americas, is the fact that corporations can sue, can slap lawsuits on governments if they anticipate a loss of profits. There was one case that made that was very fairly publicized in Canada. Etel Corporation, a corporation based in North Virginia, I think, who produces an additive for gas, the MMT. And they wanted to put this additive in gas in Canada. Our Minister of Environment at the federal government tried to pass a law against prohibiting MMT because it was proven by several studies that it has highly toxic effects on the human nervous system. And Metal Corporation slapped a lawsuit on the government for, I think, a couple of billion dollars, actually. They got financial compensation on the order of $350 million. And the law prohibiting MMT wasn't passed. So they didn't even lose money. They gained some from the federal government, $350 million, no less. And there are a couple of other lawsuits that are taking place against the federal government for the same sort of thing. Sunbelt Water Inc. of California has slapped a lawsuit on the federal government and the government of British Columbia because they refused to privatize the drinkable water there.
So free trade affects your wallet, it affects your health. That's not the message we get in the United States from the corporate mainstream media.
Well, the message you get from the corporate mainstream media, you said it yourself. It's corporate. Media, the media there, and in other countries, in fact, is big business. Why the hell would they say corporate globalization is bad? Or even globalization, or even capitalism itself?
And so, whenever you talk to your friends and family, do they know what you mean when you talk about globalization, or do you have to talk with them very extensively, or do you have short phrases for them that makes it easily understandable?
Actually, I have to talk fairly extensively with my family whenever I want to get around discussing these issues. I'm kind of a black sheep in my family, if you'll take my meaning.
For sure.
Well, the only activist actually in my family. So
how do they react to you when you talk about globalization and capitalism?
Let's just say I have to be damn convincing.
And how do you do that?
Well, being well informed is always a good place to start. Especially considering that, for example, what I told you about Ethyl Corporation and Sunbelt Water Inc., those are concrete examples. Okay, of course, the thing is, globalization itself is a process that is to be seriously questioned, as is capitalism. But then again, I don't think a lot of people are ready for anti-capitalist struggles.
Not yet, at least.
Yeah, even though one of the things that interest me is the way we live also. Look at how much water you can waste in the bathroom during the course of a day. When you take it, and the thing is, the worst thing is, it's fairly simple to stop wasting some water. You just have to think about it for a second.
And as far as moving from being informed to activism, what was that transition for you?
Well, I already took part in some actions in college, so actually I said, well, I should do that. And I think also bigger part of being an activist is being informed and communicating that information to others. Because you have to say, even though there are independent medias and all that kind of thing, they aren't well known. Quite simple. It's as simple as that. We have a couple of alternative publications in Quebec, but how many people read them? Not many. And all of them are struggling to find money to finance their operations.
So what's the reaction of the citizens of Quebec City to the Summit of the Americas? How are they preparing for it?
How are the citizens are preparing for it? Do you mean citizens in general, or
well, let's hear about the officials too. How are the officials preparing for this first?
I think the officials are going to send in lots of cops. Someone told me they might augment governmental spending for the police just before the summit. I think it will be about 3,000 cops, and we can expect the same. I think we can expect also the same kind of defenses and barricades that we saw in Windsor during the meetings of the OAS. 12-foot high barricades made of steel, all soldered together.
That's the Organization of American States?
Yes, OAS. Oh, I should have said it.
So how do the citizens react to the police preparing like that? I mean, it's their city, and they're not used to that kind of police force daily. Are they pretty acceptant of it? Or are they fearful that the people coming to their city are terrorists? Or how are they reacting?
I imagine, let's say, the common people would be fairly fearful of that, because that's what is...
Fearful of the police?
Well, fearful of the manifestations in general, because the attitude that is conveyed in the mainstream media around here is that, watch out, our police is preparing for the Summit of the Americas. There might be violence there. And they certainly are gearing up for that kind of violence.
Even though these people are coming as nonviolent protesters, and they say that.
Well, nonviolent protesters, That's not really sure. I mean, I can't pretend to answer, to speak for every single soul who is going to be in Quebec City in April next year. But I'll say yes, a majority is nonviolent, but that's not the image that is conveyed. For example, look at what happened in Seattle at the WTO meetings. There are some people who broke the windows of Nike Town and...
not exactly violence, but...
Yeah, but it's like, okay, striking against a corporate icon, and God knows Nike does exploit people in the third world countries, so it's kind of, so it's a bit deserved, if you ask me. But then again, what I heard was that a lot of these people were agitators, professional agitators paid by the police to raise some hell, do some violent actions, and then make the entire movement look bad. But the thing is also, in Seattle, at the WTO meetings, the police didn't go after those who were breaking windows and doing that kind of shit. They were going after the nonviolent protesters and gassing them where they stood.
Mm-hmm. Do you have an invitation to extend to people of the United States to come to your city and protest the Summit of the Americas and the expansion of NAFTA to the Western Hemisphere?
Well, I'd say it's a symbol. Like the WTO meeting, it's a symbolic occasion. Because, of course, there will be other meetings of the WTO and other summits of the Americas. But it's important because these meetings are publicized and they are saying also, basically, we want to negotiate with the people, we want to learn their opinion. And one of the things that they said recently was that they were literally going to barricade themselves, hide themselves behind the 12-foot-high barricades.
In Quebec City?
Yeah. Well, the Congress Center is pretty much going to be shielded and all that, I think. So, what they are saying is, we want to negotiate with people, but we're willing to hide behind barriers because the movement is a bit too strong for us to handle, maybe. And if I have one invitation to say to the people of the U.S., I would say, globalization, such as it is, increasingly excludes lots and lots of people. Can we accept this as a civilized society? Personally, I say heck no. And that's why I'm ready to extend an invitation to all of you to come to Quebec City in 2001 and protest against the meeting, what the meeting symbolizes also.
So you're looking for a mass of people in the streets of Quebec City in April?
Yes.
All right, well, we'll be there.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.